Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. As we continue our observance of Black History Month, we take a look at Black firsts. Today, for example, Dr. Monifa McKnight is the first woman appointed superintendent of the Montgomery County Public School System. There is, of course, Kamala Harris, first woman of color as vice president of the United States. But what does it mean to be Black and first? Is it a big deal for the community? And is it a big deal for those who have achieved it? Well, we are talking about it tonight, and we are beginning with my guest, Jackie McWilliams, first woman commissioner of the CIAA, and Michelle Davis Younger, first Black woman mayor of Manassas, Virginia. You want to talk about this. If you have comments, if you have questions about being Black and first, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Madam Mayor, thank you for being on the program again.
Absolutely. Hello, my friend Harold. How are you doing this evening? It's so good to be with you.
Thank you. Good to have you in. Thank you so much. And Jackie McWilliams, thank you so much for being on the program as well.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So, Madam Mayor, let me first start with you, because it's been about a year, and we've actually had this conversation before. So I can already hear it, you know, as they say it with your chest. how has it been being Black and first in Manassas? How would you describe it?
It has been exhilarating. I say it's a labor of love. I, being the winner, have moved past the first because we have work to do. But people are still basking in the win. And it was huge. I don't want to minimize it. But it has been a whirlwind. It has been educational for me, stepping into that role with absolutely no transition at all, just walking into a desk and a chair. Having to make it my own, make it Michelle, put my foot on it, and just keep it moving forward. We're doing so many wonderful things in this city, and being able to have my footprint on a lot of projects is amazing. But being the first, that's what, especially this month, a lot of folks are having me come and speak to schools and do, because they're so proud. And being from the city, that just takes the pride to another level. Being born and raised in Manassas, it's hometown. It feels good. You know, we knew her when, and so people are still basking in that pride of me being the first and that they know me. And so it's been amazing.
When did you stop thinking about it yourself and really just dive into the work? Was there an aha moment when you did just say, okay, let me put down this Black and First trophy and pick up the mantle of the work? Because of course, you were elected in the midst of a pandemic.
Right. I think January getting, sworn in, that was huge. Then February, Black History Month, so everybody had me out then. And then March is Women's History Month. So it was about April or so when I finally could say, okay, let's sit down, get to work. So the first few months, it was a lot of that, and a lot of people wanting to come and see me, moms bringing their daughters to me. We need them to see you in person. We need them to touch you. We need to know that this is real. This really happened. You know, come to my office, see it. So it was a few months, only because it just kept, staying in the news, and it kept, because of the trifecta, they call me, being the first person of color, first Democrat and first woman to ever hold a seat. So it was a few months before it actually was like, okay, now we got work to do, y'all. Let's go.
Yeah. You know, Jackie, let me just say, you already have my vote because you've got some Morgan State blood running through you. You did some work there, and you went to Hampton, the other HU. We'll forgive you for that.
Okay.
We'll let you slide.
It's all the love. Love to share in the HU.
Well, I don't know about love. It's like, it's not love.
It is.
We'll let you slide on that. But this isn't your first rodeo being the first. You've been with the CIAA for quite some time, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And so obviously you have earned the confidence, you have earned, the trust of those in this organization. But kind of give me the cliff notes of this story of getting to this place, because you are the first.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I just listening to Mayor, I mean, you never go in wanting to be the first. You just want the opportunity and the access to do your craft. And I've been in the industry almost in college athletics for 29 years. I was at the NCAA director, one of the first directors in the men's Final Four, and helped putting on one of the largest events in the country with two other directors that were males, but I worked for a female who was a managing director, which was a first for men's basketball. I think, you know, the opportunity, and I don't want to say to be the first, but working in at the NCAA, working at Morgan State, you know, a lot of men in this industry have helped me grow in the business, and you want to be what you see, and I didn't see a lot of me in roles of leadership, not even athletic director. When I was a college student, I saw senior women administrators who were leading and helping the ADs, but not in roles of leadership. When the job for the CIAA came open, I was at the NCAA, and I worked in the CIAA before, but I knew I had a passion for organizational structure and leadership in the conference level. So this was my dream job. I tell people all the time, they always ask me, well, what's next? I'm in my dream job. I get to do exactly what I prepared myself to do, was to come back home to a conference that gave me an opportunity to get my first job at Virginia Union, to work in the conference. I worked at Norfolk State, Morgan State, and worked at the NCAA. So the HBCU world for me was a place that I wanted and desired to be. So being the first, there's only been three full-time commissioners at the CIAA. The conference is 110 years old this year, and there's only been three full-time commissioners. And I'm the first female for all Division I, II, and III in the NCAA amongst all conferences. And that's weird to me that there's not more of us representing. And now there's four, so I won't be the last. But the fact that we're in a male industry that doesn't really give the same access and opportunity for women is just, that's what I've been fighting for, being in this position and having the seat at the table to help make change.
Why is it, that's an interesting, excuse me, comment. You said that that's weird for you because you are, as I said, a woman who has earned your stripes in a male-dominated industry. And mm-hmm. by all accounts, you have done particularly well. So why is it weird?
Because I know so many women and black women who are as qualified as I am to have these opportunities. And we're constantly having to work harder, do more, run football programs, get our doctorates and PhD. And I don't see my white colleague friends having to do that, or my black male colleague friends doing that. But for black women, you know, to be able to get in this seat and then to be the only one, I just think, and maybe it's not weird, maybe it's disappointing that we have not, that our industry hasn't done a better job in making sure that we have access and opportunity to lead organizations, not just the CIAA, but any Division I, II, or III conference. I mean, Sonia at the MEAC is the first full-time black female to be in that position. And I think they've had five or six full-time commissioners,
Why hasn't she ever been considered? Why hasn't a woman been considered before? And a lot of times we won't apply for those positions because we don't think we have enough skill sets, or we don't have enough contractual work, and we don't have this, or we have not been exposed to those things to be prepared to be in these seats. I was exposed and prepared to be in this seat.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about Black and First as part of our observance of Black History Month. If you have a comment, if you have a question about being Black and First, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So here's the hard question, Mayor Younger. Does it matter?
Does it matter that we're in our position?
Does it matter to be Black and First in 2022? I mean,
It didn't, but it does.
Yeah.
Why do you say that? Because, you know, growing up, and we are close in age, and, you know, we were from the same generation, let me say that. And, you know, growing up, when you talked about Black history, then we used to talk about the first Black this, the first Black that.
Mm-hmm.
And we would swell with pride in having those conversations.
Yeah.
And whether it is a Harris or an Obama or a Powell, for example, or a Rice, or, and I could go on and on and on. But some people would say it's, you know, it's 2022, and the Jackie McWilliams of the world, and the Mayor Davis Youngers of the world, they are here, they are qualified, they have the intellectual and the political chutzpah, so of course they should be there.
I flip it around and say it's 2018 and we're doing it for the first time. It shouldn't have taken this long. It's 2020 and it's just happening. So I'll be glad when we don't have to say the first. Don't know if we'll get there, but certainly it does matter, and why I do what I do to just show our young ladies that this is absolutely obtainable for you, and don't stop pushing. It's a shame, but it is definitely important to share that. And it is. Look how long it took to get vice president, first woman, first Black, you know. So it does still matter. And it shouldn't, but it is still out there. And it does swell me with pride, lots of pride in that. And I try to create the next, you know.
If I may, Jackie, when did you, just as I asked, Mayor Younger, when did you have to put down the Black and First piece and realize that the work was more important? Or was it? Are you always mindful of being Black and First?
You know, that's such a great question, because I swing back and forth with that. When I took the job, I went in to go get the job. I told people that I would be the next CIAA commissioner. That was my dream job. That was the place. I didn't think about being the first. I didn't think about being a Black woman. I thought about being prepared to take over this conference and lead with presidents and chancellors to make sure student athletes have the greatest experience like I did as a student athlete, and what I was able to present at the NCAA and other places I've been. And part of it is, you know, recognizing that I was the first. I had a couple of presidents, Dr. Bro at Bowie State. I think today's her birthday, so this is a good reminder. But I was at Bowie State for a game against Virginia Union a few years ago. And I remember when I go to games and the presidents and the ADs, they're so gracious. They roll out the red carpet, and I don't need any of that. I just want to go and watch the game, say hello, but I am the commissioner. And so they wanted to say, commissioner is in the house, everybody, like, stand up. And
and I just wanted to fall under my seat. Like, I didn't want all that attention. I'm like, I just want to watch games. I didn't want all that because it was her birthday. It's her institution. And what she said to me, she said, Commissioner, Commissioner, she looked at me and she said, there are boys and girls, men and women who need to see you. Yes. They need to see women like you.
Yes.
Stand up and stand with pride. And from that day on, I never, ever have questioned people saying the commissioner's in the house. Is it uncomfortable? It is. I had another president say to me, you know, coming in the fold again, I came into a conference that needed some recovery. There was a lot on the plate. You know, Mayor, you know, you come in a city, you're coming behind somebody who's been in a position for 22 years. I'm the third full time. You know, I've got to change and do things my way, create a path, but keep the foundation of who the conference is. And sometimes felt imposter syndrome. Like, should I really be here? Am I really that qualified? Because I told them I was going to do this, this, and that. Can I really do it? And I absolutely have hit every benchmark plus that I said I would. But I had a president at Virginia Union. He was my chair, and he looked at me. I was on the phone, and I was contemplating about a decision. It was a very hard decision for the conference. And he said, Commissioner, you are the commissioner. You can make the decision. And once he said that, I'm like, well, dang, I am the commissioner. And it gave me this sense of ownership and pride, not being the first, but I'm the commissioner. I have a responsibility to lead this conference, and they have put trust in me to do the job. And so all that went away. It was probably in that moment, and that was like 3 years in. It took a while to get there. That whole first thing could feel, I don't want to say traumatizing to some of us, but you don't want to mess up because there's not many women of color in your role in the first place. So if you mess up, we all know, Mayor, right, what happens when we mess up. The next person doesn't get to be the next. And I didn't want that to happen.
And Madam Mayor, I know we're going to lose you at 7:30, but I'll let you have the next 20 seconds for a final word before the break.
Oh, I just absolutely am thrilled to be a part of the program. It is an honor and a privilege to serve my city, and I represent any chance I get, opportunities. I bring young ladies into my chambers once a month, have them sit in my seat, bang my gavel. I have a program called My Mayor Looks Like Me. It is awesome able to do that, and they don't forget it. That's leaving those seeds. That's why we're elevated. To bring along the next. That's what we do. That's why we're blessed to be here. So it's been amazing. Thank you so much, Harold, for always including me in your drum. I appreciate it so much.
Absolutely. You're the bomb. Hang in there. Stay safe. We'll be talking soon.
Thank you so much. Have a good night. Thank you.
We're going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget, download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We're continuing this conversation in just a few seconds. Black and First, stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we continue our observance of Black History Month as we look at Black and First. My guest is Jackie McWilliams. She is the first woman commissioner of the CIAA. Also joining the conversation now, Dr. Tama Bryant, president-elect of the American Psychological Association. She's the first president under 50 years old. I can't imagine a whole bunch of a wall full of pictures of guys with beards. Is that what we're talking about, Dr. Bryant?
That's funny.
Yes. Bringing in the youth voices, the younger voices.
I'm here for that. Can I ask you how old you are or how young you are? I mean, since
I'm in my 40s, so I'm just on the edge. I'm not a young adult.
Well, you know, 40 is the new Tama Bryant.
All right. Say so.
Well, first of all, congratulations on on being, you know, elected to this position first and foremost? Because I know that it has to be, it has to be heady.
Yes, especially during this time. It, for me, it was the right time to run. I'm a trauma psychologist and also have a big focus on racism as trauma. And so in looking at the realities of both COVID and Black Lives Matter and Stop Asian Hate and all of what is happening, it was apparent to me that this was the right time.
Why do you believe that it is the right time for you now? And why do you think that the constituency of your organization also agreed with that?
Yes. I believe they were looking for people who would have a relevant agenda. Sometimes people can have issues they're committed to, but it doesn't resonate with what is happening around us. And the time and space that we are in, unlike many of my predecessors who had to strategize about how to convince the public that psychology was important, we are in such a time with this pandemic and the realities of oppression that many of my colleagues and myself are full because people are stressed mm-hmm. out. And, you know, we have seen in the news the recent suicides, and there's just so much that is happening. And so it's important for the organization to be innovative and tuned in to addressing the needs of the public in culturally appropriate ways.
Do you find that also to be the case, Jackie, in your position? I mean, this is not just about basketball and sports. There is the intersection of politics, of social issues as well.
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Brian, I was a psychology major. That was my undergrad. And so I so wish that I would have got my PhD in psychology. But I do know that I'm using it every single day for all the things that you're saying. You know, even though I work for a Black conference, it's a collegiate conference, there are so many things around just outside of the game that are important to our HBCUs and our community, where sport can be the center to help address those issues. We address mental health issues with our student athletes. We address financial and food insecurity with our students and our student athletes, and the list goes on. We really have a great opportunity in the CIAA, and we used our platform for sport to really meet our communities where they are at our institutions with our student athletes, but also work with our student athletes to address those things that are really impacting their day to day. And right now, mental health for student athletes is huge. And it's huge for administrators as well. I mean, we are all, specifically at Black colleges where, Dr. Bryant, where you said, you know, the Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter, the COVID, all those things hit us all at one time. And I can tell you the impact that it had on our student athletes, not being able to compete, but trying to find relevant space to see themselves beyond the game. That was our chance to do it during this past couple of years. And so it's been nice to get back in the fold, but we're still trying to manage those mental health and those expectations for our students as administrators to serve them in the best way that we can at our HBCUs.
Dr. Bryant, as a young person, as the first president, you know, under 50, obviously, as I said, you have a mandate from your organization. But have you ever felt that some were giving you the side eye because you are so young?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm ready for all of that. this is what we train for. This is, we come prepared. And I have jokingly said coming out of many of the meetings that Black church culture prepared me well. needing to decode like what the agenda is, you know, what the unspoken is, the different personalities. And so, you know, you have all of that going. So I would say I have learned
to take it as a gift to be underestimated. Mm. You know, before it would be frustrating, annoying, irritating, but it's a wonderful thing when people don't see you coming, right? Because they don't have time to organize against you. And then you can just, you know, show up knowing that you have something to contribute. And I would say, you know, with the urgency of the time, carrying that, I'll say, like, in my belly. So, like, I'm not just there to be a placeholder. I'm not content with, like, tokenism. And so to know, you know, I've come, as you say, with a mandate. And so, you know, I'm going to do the work that I am assigned to do.
But how do you handle, as you say, you know, the side eye? How do you handle the, you know, I mean so you said you're ready for that, and let's be honest, not everybody is ready for all of this magnificent blackness that you bring to the job.
You
get
the side eye back, don't you, Doc?
Well, I will say, you know, what is really important, and this is critical, is being a collaborator, knowing how to be a team player. So when I was campaigning last summer, what I kept saying is, it's not just about me, this is about a movement. And so it was about positioning other like-minded people to be in other positions in the organization, right? It cannot be like a one-person show. I'm going to be president, and then I won't be anymore. So in order to have, like, sustainable change, it really is about connecting with kindred spirits who have a similar agenda, and us being in different pathways and different roles and activating kind of at the same time or by ripple effect. And so, like, my campaign co-director of strategy is now the president of one of the major divisions in the association. And on council, which is like the governance of the organization, are people who were from what I called my dream team. So it's important to know how to work with people and to surround yourself with gifted people. Like, if you have to be like the only smart one, you're not going to get very much done. So I know a lot of brilliant people, so let them do what they do, and then together we can actually transform the space.
On, you know, Jackie and, you know, Dr. Bryant, on the issue of being, you know, black and first, I remember, even for myself, when I was in, you know, Huntsville, Alabama, and it's kind of, I remember, you know, Jackie said, I was going to get the job. And when I left a TV station in Tallahassee to get a job at a TV station in Huntsville, Alabama. And I got the job, and my biggest concern was making $7,000 more from $16,000 to $23,000. That's all I was concerned about. But when I got there and sat in the anchor chair, and then somebody said, you know, you're the first black male anchor that this city has ever had in any of the TV stations. And this was back in the 90s. And I remember feeling burdened, but also, you know, Alabama is Alabama. And, but I also felt a little fear and concern. And I'll ask you first, do you ever feel a burden, Jackie, fear and or concern, or, because you did mention that imposter syndrome, you know, in the back of your, you know, behind your right ear, tapping, you know, at the back of your neck. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, my first 3 years were so hard. I can't even tell you what happened in the first year. It was such a blur. In the second year, it started to feel a little clear. I went and actually got therapy and got a coach because the anxiety of failure for me. I just didn't want to fail, and I didn't want to disappoint my family, my community, my friends. So that imposter syndrome was real for me, and the anxiety and the panic attacks. I never I've had anxiety before, but not in the way that I did when I took this role. I didn't realize the capacity of what I was dealing with. So on the outside, yes, this is my dream job, but a lot came with the dream job that I just wasn't prepared for emotionally that I thought I was. And so, you know, the being the only one at times can feel isolating. And it does now because I'm one of the few, I'm the only black female in Division II in the NCAA. And I work for an HBCU that is very different in how we do our work compared to other conferences. And there's not a lot of people to talk to about that in my role. I can talk to them about, you know, the basics of NCAA, but some of the cultural things that really impact my day to day, the politics around it, is very different than some of my other colleagues. And so it could feel isolating, but I've learned, you know, in my toolkit how to pull things out. I learned who around my team. I've got a mental health team. I've got an executive mentor team to help me pull it together. And I work for an amazing board. But the fear, I've had to learn to have more faith over fear to get through because the fear can paralyze you. And for a moment, I was feeling paralyzed.
What about you, Dr. Bryant? Because, again, you are, if I may, and Jackie will mm-hmm. appreciate this, you are working in rare air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I would say the burden is also like the fire that motivates me. Mm. So the burden is like I have to make it count. Right. When I was talking about like not being a token, mm-hmm. like I can't afford to like have all those people voted and not deliver. Right. So that is the burden of like, you know, I stand for certain things and I have to, you know, move the needle in that direction. And at the same time, while I that there is a weight to that, there is also, you know, that's the what gets me up in the morning, right? What motivates mm-hmm. me, what energizes me. It's like I got to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever question your journey, Dr. Bryant? I mean, because I was just kind of looking, you know, I was, you know, looking at your credentials and yeah, you went to Duke and so we'll let you slide on that. I don't see any HBCU stuff in here. I don't know whether they let you walk on campus at Howard or Morgan or Hampton. I don't know if your feet burn or what. Yeah. What's going on with that?
Let me tell you jokingly and seriously about this the HBCU connection. One for family. I was going to say. My dad is a graduate of Morgan and my
okay.
Morehouse.
Well, there it yes, is. Indeed. There it
yes,
is.
Indeed. There it is.
Morgan, there it is.
I used to, when we were walking around Duke University, a lot of black women would talk about feeling invisible. And so whenever we would feel like invisible, overlooked, all we had to do was jump in a car and drive over to North Carolina Central and you would be seen and recognized.
Right.
So, yes, it's important to have those places that nourish us. And in terms of doubting myself, I would say, you know, definitely, especially when you're first starting off, you know, so I graduated with my doctorate in 2000, and I can remember the first time, you know, in a hospital, medical center where I was working, hearing them call on the loudspeaker, "Dr. Bryant, your clients are here." And I'm like, "That's me." So, you know, it is that like identity shift of like Tama from Baltimore and now like, oh, okay, right? This is another world. And then just, you know, the more you do it, the more you walk in it, the more it is you, right? That you're not just trying it on, but that is your identity and, you know, and being comfortable being yourself. Because that's one of the things I tell our graduate students. Don't think that to get this education, you have to leave mm-hmm. yourself behind because it's not worth it. It won't be worth it to have all these titles. And then, like, who in the world are you? So I have to show up in the fullness of who I am and who raised me beyond the degrees.
You mentioned, and all jokes aside, you mentioned about you know, Black Lives Matter. You mm-hmm. mentioned, you know, mental health. Mm-hmm. What is your charge moving forward in this position?
Yes. So two major pieces. One is looking at creating culturally responsive toolkits to handle, to address grief and trauma. So we have been disproportionately affected by death by COVID, death by police brutality, and then, you know, all of these different forms of trauma. And one of the things for mental health professionals and the public to understand is that racism can be traumatizing. Mm. And we have been affected. There's something called vicarious trauma, where even if you aren't the one directly targeted, what it is like to see Black death laying out on the street, to see it in social media, and then to often see no justice as a response, it has an impact on us. There's also intergenerational racial trauma. And so, you know, some people call that ancestral wounds, right? How have we been affected by what our people have had to live through? And so being tuned into addressing that directly to the community, but then also equipping mental health professionals, because many are not trained to handle us with care, to really understand what we live with. So you imagine you're in this place of really feeling vulnerable and finally reach out to help, and God forbid the person you reach out to, you know, commits a microaggression or doesn't, you know, validate your experience, or you tell them about experiences with racism and they say, are you sure? You know, maybe you're just being sensitive. So the work has to be done directly to serve our community, but also to help train more mental health professionals to understand and to appreciate who we are. And not in that sense of like Messiah complex of like, oh, we're just to be pitied and come rescue us. Like, we are a resilient people. We have a lot of strengths and resources. And we have been affected by both historical realities and what continues to happen today.
You know, Dr. Bryan, you just said something. You just put a name to something to a tale that I've been telling for decades. Mm. When I was in Alabama, when I would cover news in the rural South, mm-hmm. and Black people would come up to me and they would say to me, you know, be careful, you know, while you're down here, because there was, you know, fear of oppression. There was the history that they had felt. But me being a native Washingtonian, growing up in this D.C. Mm-hmm. metro where, you know, where we ran everything, legal and illegal, politically, socially, mm-hmm. financially, you know, Marion Barry and everything else, where I walked in pride with my head up, and people would say, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Washington, D.C., because even though I was aware of that history, my head, my chin was up, my chest was out, because I was not afraid. Mm-hmm. And yet what you just described was what many in that community, because they did not have the advantage that I had of coming from a community of that kind of Black strength. Mm-hmm. And so that makes that.
Yeah.
And so thank you for putting a name, a tag on something that I've always known but could never really identify. But I knew it, I smelled it, I could see it, I felt it. But but to you, you know, Jackie, the same question for you. You've, as I said, this is not your first rodeo. You've been doing this for a while, but the world is changing. Sports is changing. What is your charge now going forward in your dream job?
Yeah, you know, it's, well, first let me say I am absolutely blessed to be working for 12 presidents, five which are women. At one point we had six women presidents. That has never happened in our conference. And so to work with a very diverse group of leaders that support and want to advance the conference to whatever that next level is, the sports is changing. The NCAA has changed. We just voted on a new constitution where divisions will have more autonomy, and we're trying to figure out, well, what does that look like for us? We're Division II. We still consider ourselves a powerhouse of HBCU institutions, and ensuring that we're doing all the work to give these student-athletes not just the greatest experience on the field and court, but also making sure that we identify ways to connect them to our partners for jobs and mentoring and to address those concerns. I will tell you, all of us in the CIAA and probably in the HBCU space and the things that Dr. Bryan just said, you know, to be in a community of culture where you feel like you belong allows me to be a lot creative. It allows me to strategize very differently with a group of presidents who are strategists and doctors and philosophers and all those other things, but bring a lot to the table for me to work with to advance us. So what will we look like in the next 5 years? We'll have that opportunity to connect this May during our board advance. We have a strategic plan that we're following. It's all good, but the landscape is moving really fast. Recruitment, retention, all those things to help our institutions on their campus with recruitment, but still be able to put and produce these amazing tournaments and events that we do that bring our people and culture together. So there's a lot of work to do. I think we're still just trying to figure out what does it look like in the next 3 years with the landscape changing so fast.
Now, the CIAA, it's coming to Baltimore this summer.
Yes.
And I live
it's
in Baltimore.
The end of the month.
Yeah.
The end of the month.
Oh, the end of the month. Yeah, okay. So I live in Baltimore. I live a mile from Morgan.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I commute. So can I get tickets? No, I'm kidding. But when you come, what will fans see? What will the community experience?
Yeah, so obviously they're going to experience games. I mean, that's why we're there. But we have such a healthy schedule. We talked about that today. We had a panel with the city partners today to talk about how we hopefully will make some impact with the minority and owned businesses in the city. The volunteers and integrating Coppin and Morgan and Maryland Eastern Shore as a part of our community. Morgan used to be a member of the CIAA back in the day, and so was Howard. Howard is a founding member institution. We'll be distributing about 400 pairs of shoes at an elementary school that week. We'll have a Hall of Fame where we'll celebrate some of our greatest Hall of Famers. Earl the Pearl will be coming back. Bobby Dandridge will be coming back. We'll be doing a youth clinic with tons of young people so that they can understand and value the history, but also value the opportunity to be a part of the CIAA and see our institutions as a place for them to go to get their education, but also play the game. The high schools in the area, we move some stuff virtual. Normally we have about 2,000 kids that would come to high school day, but because it's virtual, we'll be reaching out to the world as we did last year to have students come and see what our schools. There's going to be so much that week, so we want people to go on CIAAtournament.org. But the economic impact is what everybody's always looking for. We made about $650 million. In 15 years in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're in a COVID year, so we're being a little bit conservative of what that number could be. But right now we're about 70, almost 80% of capacity in hotels. Tickets are going well. So it's going to be a very different feel and look than it has been in North Carolina for the last few decades.
In these last few minutes, and I'll start with you, Dr. Bryant, what is your message for those who would follow in your shoes, those who, from an academic standpoint, who want to be Black and First, from a career standpoint, who want to have their chins up and their chests out and be black and first, what would you say to them now?
I would say get into spaces and places that nourish you so that you can fill your tank, that we cannot thrive on empty. And often when you are the strong one in your family or the strong one in your community, you could have a lot of people depending on you, but you want to be intentional about setting up spaces for mutuality, reciprocity, places where you receive so that when you show up to do the work, you actually have something to give.
And same and same for you. I'll let you have the last word, Jackie.
Yeah, I would say, you know, go get it. You know, don't second guess yourself if you're prepared for an opportunity to be in a position like we're in. You don't have to compare yourself to anybody. Just know what you've done, the work that you have prepared yourself to be, and all the things that Dr. Bryant just said. You need a community to help you survive in the industry, because it can feel lonely at times, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, you can be by yourself, but not alone. Have that, you know, have that toolkit.
Definitely.
You definitely have that toolkit, and I'm glad to hear that you have come out on the other side and are doing it with flying colors. I'm going to look for you when you come to Baltimore.
Like I said,
I'm just a mile away. We certainly salute you, Dr. Bryant.
Thank you for having us.
Congratulations.
Thank
you know, the 40-something is, like I said, it's the new Dr. Tama Bryant.
I'll take it.
Again, and Jackie awesome. McWilliams, again, thank you so much. We also want to thank the Honorable Mayor Michelle Davis Younger from Manassas, Virginia, for joining us earlier. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, February 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.